We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 330. So it was a 2 out of 3 in Tampa. I think, Scott, that's exactly what the Yankees wanted to do, and they embarrassed them a little bit because the Rays had to deal with their garbage can of a ballpark this weekend. They proved to the rest of baseball their team might be all right, but they're not really a legitimate franchise playing in that dump.
Not that they needed to prove to anybody. We all understood what this place was, but of course the power had to go out. It does. Something weird happens every time we go down there, so I'm glad that they finally, they're like, wait, hold on, guys. It's the ninth inning. They're leaving in like an hour. We got to do something. Something crazy has to happen. Let's get the power, the lights out. The power is going to go out. I was listening to it because I was down in South Carolina all weekend for my sister's graduation of University of South Carolina. So congratulations to Jill. We had a fun weekend with the family. But I was listening to John Sterling, and he was talking about how it happened before. On Friday, only went out for a little bit. The lights were flickering at one point. But this one was just, you know, like everybody lost it. Everybody lost it.
Apparently, I saw people tweeting, some of the beat reporters, that they put in a new lighting system over the offseason. Because, of course, they're just putting lipstick on a pig at that point down on that place.
Why are they spending any money on that place at all?
Well, I think they're stuck there for like a pretty long time on a lease.
Yeah, oh, they're definitely there.
So they're trying to make the best of it, but
until someone else swoops up and puts a Mayflower truck and gets them out in the middle of the night.
Some Yankee fans were trolling them as well on Saturday because the Rays Twitter account put out a post like thanking all their fans for a sellout. It was like the first sellout of the year, but then you realize they block off the entire upper deck. So they sold out the lower bowl on a Saturday afternoon against the Yankees.
While they're in first place.
Had to have been 70% Yankee fans there.
Yeah, while in first place.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs for the Devil Rays. And they were wearing their old,
you know what, those
horribly
are pretty,
hideous uniforms.
No, I disagree. Those are pretty hot. I like those.
you like the rainbow across the logo.
Yes,
the actual Devil Rays, because they're not even, you know, I don't even think I realized this halfway through their, like, immediately when they rebranded. I still thought they were the Devil Rays, but just like drop the devil. But it's a sun. It's a sun ray. And they play in the enclosed trop. And they're a sun ray.
Sunshine. Isn't Florida okay. The sunshine state?
I don't know. But the reason they play in a dome is because it rains all the time and it's hot as balls. You know, I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of contradictory things that happen with the Devil Rays here.
We're going to need a full report when the Bronx Pinstripes invasion happens in July.
Yeah. Again, like we said, right? Like, I'm looking forward to it just so I can shit all over the trap. I'll have to do a cameo stadium eats, even though I don't think JJ's going to be there. Maybe I'll just steal a segment.
The Yankees actually, maybe the tables have turned, because last year we know it was a house of horrors for the Yankees, as you talked with John last episode. But on Friday, Gary Sanchez hit a catwalk, and it turned out to be a single for him.
See?
It dropped, the ball's
in play.
He hit one of the inner rings, so it was just like a sky-high pop-up. It would have been a pop-up to short left field or to the shortstop, and it ended up falling. So I think maybe the tides have turned for the Yankees in Tampa.
That was it. That's all they needed, right? They just needed the ball to hit the catwalk and then land in fair territory.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. This was a big series. We talked about it last episode, going down there against the first place Rays. We shit on the Rays a lot. We make fun of them. It's still the Devil Rays, terrible ballpark. But as far as the talent on the team goes, I think it's pretty legit, and I don't think they're going to be going away this year. So this was a big series win.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be pesky. There's no doubt. Like, I think they showed kind of what they are as well, in the sense that they're going to be aggressive on the base path. They're not going to hit a ton of home runs, even though they did hit some big home runs. They got that Diaz kid looks pretty good.
Austin Meadows, too. He was wrecking ball all weekend.
Yeah, but they're definitely going to be more aggressive. They're going to be, you know, that team that doesn't go away and hangs out. And this weekend, you know, we kind of predicted what we were going to see as far as the pitchers. And it did line up like we thought, in the sense that we got Glasnow. We got Chirinos for 4 innings on Saturday. He didn't start the game, but we got him in the middle for the bulk of the game. And then we get Snell for Sunday. Yeah. So we got their best. There's no doubt about it. Maybe Glasnow wasn't at his best because there was potentially an injury during it.
Yeah, Friday's game, he looked kind of off the from the minute the game started. The first inning, you could tell he wasn't super sharp. He put a few guys on base, ended up scoring. The Yankees ended up scoring, I believe it was a wild pitch or it was a pass ball. I don't know what it was actually ruled. But then, yeah, in that fifth or sixth inning, whenever he called the trainer out with what turned out to be a forearm issue, and now he's on the IL. But, yeah, you could just tell he wasn't fully on his game. He was leading the league in ERA coming into that game.
And wins. He had six wins. You don't care about that? Because now
care less about that.
Well, what about the fact now that Herman has the most wins in Major League Baseball? We care about that more now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Herman pitched five innings on Friday, got him the win.
That's a big deal. Domingo Herman is leading the American League in wins.
So you know what I was thinking about? Because I was looking at the MLB app over the weekend. And whenever it talks about pitching matchups, it always gives wins and ERA, the win-loss record and ERA. How far away are we before it stops giving the win-loss record?
I don't think it's ever going to go away because you still have those casual fans who will never look at the analytics. I'm not asking for
expected weighted on base average or FIP or anything like that, but maybe innings pitched or something other than win-loss record.
Innings pitch is usually up there, though.
No, but they usually just do in the parentheses two stats. It's his win-loss record and then his ERA.
Yeah, I mean, it tells the story. It tells the complete story, so that's why they do that.
It's all you need to know.
That's all I need to know. I need to know how many wins this guy has so I can know how valuable he is to the team. And then I can I need to know the amount of runs that he's had per innings that he's pitched. And that's all I need to know. That's it.
I just thought
baseball cards changed. I haven't looked at the back of a baseball card in a very long time, so I don't know if they've added like stat categories into any of this any of the analytics, but I'm curious because I know they're making a comeback.
Did you used to collect baseball cards?
Oh yeah, big time. Dollars and cents in Ridgewood, New Jersey was my spot. Used to ride our bikes there all the time.
Binders and everything.
One of those binders. I have
multiple binders,
stacks of binders in closets right now, and stacks of like those old, you know, or not the old, but the boxes you get printer paper in or copier paper in. Yeah. I have boxes of those full. I have a lot of baseball cards.
Any good ones? Any valuable ones?
That I know of? No. I mean, I'm sure there's some really good ones in there, but again, I haven't looked.
You got any bubblegum left? Maybe.
The bubblegum started going away like right was that when I was.
No, right? I used to get bubblegum.
Not on the good packs.
Well,
they didn't have any gum in the, like, Tops didn't have gum.
When they started getting worried about people like poisoning the gum or something, I think that's when they stopped. But no, I remember I had some packs. Maybe they were older than my dad had, like that he bought in the 80s, maybe. But
so the gum disintegrated if you actually
it just shriveled tried up to into eat it. It shriveled up from like a full stick of gum down to like a little puny thing. But
yeah, no, I have a ton. I was big into it. I started getting into basketball cards too towards the end. So I have a few binders of those guys too.
The Devil Rays conversation had me thinking about somebody I saw. I was at a mall in New Jersey over the weekend, and I saw a guy walking around with a Yankees hat on and a Wade Boggs throwback Devil Rays jersey.
That's just weird. Like, is that just a...
At first, when he was walking towards me, I just saw him wearing the Devil Rays and a Yankees hat, and I was like, oh, look at this asshole. Maybe he's doing it ironically. And then I saw the back of it, and it was Wade Boggs, and I was like, you know what? He played for the Yankees. If there's one Devil Rays jersey you're going to have, it's going to be Wade Boggs, or maybe Jose Canseco.
Tino played for the Rays for a minute, didn't he? At the very, very end?
Before or after he came back to the Yankees?
I want to say before, but I got to look at my timeline now, but I swear to God I can picture him in that horrible uniform. There's like bad memories of these guys at the end of their careers.
But he
in that
wasn't
horrible
a Devil
uniform.
Ray, I don't think. Weren't they the Rays by that point?
I'm looking it up.
All right. You look it up, and I'm going to run through a couple housekeeping items. So you guys know we've got a event. Our next BP Crew event is May 31st. It's a Friday night at the stadium against the Red Sox. It is going to be a hell of an atmosphere because I don't know if you've noticed, but the Red Sox are only 2.5 back of the Yankees now. They're on a tear. They've won 5 in a row and 10 out of their last 12. We've kind of been mentioning it every episode for the last couple weeks, but the Red Sox figured out how to play baseball again. Thankfully, they just took the first 3-4 weeks of the season off, gave the Yankees a little bit of a cushion while they were dealing with all their injuries, gave the Rays a little bit of a head start, but they're coming up now. So I expect that to be a massive series, four games at the end of the month, May 31st. Tickets are on sale. They are selling out pretty soon, I expect. What do we have? Like over 200 tickets sold.
We're at around 250 right now.
Do not wait until the last minute to go buy these. If you go, if you think, oh, I'm going to grab tickets last minute on a secondary market site, yeah, you could do that. You're going to be sitting in the upper deck for double the price of what you could pay for our tickets in section 205, which is a great seat. You're going to be with a bunch of people, pregame party, t-shirt, hot dog, beer in the game for, what was it, $96?
Yeah, $97, I think it is.
Okay, 97.
It is a good deal, and the secondary market is starting to climb, especially with the Red Sox doing what they're doing. And by the way, Tino Martinez did play the year before he came back in 2004.
He played for the Devil Rays. Before he came to the Yankees, after the Cardinals, before the Yankees.
Yep, and it was a full blown Devil Rays season.
All right, so yeah, if there's one Devil Rays jersey I'm gonna get, it's gonna be Tino. But Wade Boggs might be second.
I gotta tell you, I'm not doing it anyway.
Like, no, I'm never doing it.
I still don't.
I have
buy
one
this.
Yankees it's, jersey, so I don't think I'm
yeah,
really.
I'm not a big jersey guy in the first place, but I still would never get a Tampa Bay Devil Rays jersey. I don't care who's on the back. I don't care whose name it is. They put names on the back. I assume it's they've got to, right? It's the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Yeah.
So I would.
Those fans
I would
don't
never.
Know what's going on.
I would yeah. never. Don Mattingly played for them. I would not get his jersey. It would I feel like it would be disrespectful to the Yankees player to get their jersey in a Devil Rays uniform. It would be disrespectful.
What's your one Yankees jersey?
I have a Jeter jersey.
Okay.
That I recently got.
Why?
Because I wanted a Jeter jersey. Because I'm actually going to hang it. I'm going to put it.
Is it a home or a road?
It's a home jersey. It's a pinstriped Derek Jeter jersey. Okay. And I only got it so that I could use it as decoration in my office because I will probably never wear it.
I have a Paul O'Neill Road World Series emblem. I think it's the 2000 World Series emblem jersey.
Yeah.
June 22nd, that's going to be the event afterwards. That's against Houston. And then, as we mentioned, July 6th is our Tampa invasion. All those tickets to all the events, those three plus all the ones later in the season, are on the website. I also want to mention, so Colleen and I are organizing a watch party for the Saturday London game. That's Saturday, June 29th. There's going to be a watch party in New York City. We've narrowed down the location to Tavern 29. It's a good location for all people if you're traveling in from Long Island, traveling in from north of the city, from New Jersey. It's near all major public transportation. If you guys are interested in going, there's a Facebook event for it. So you just go to the BP Crew page. You can find the event. Tweet us if you're interested and you can't find it. But June 29th, Saturday afternoon, it's a 1 o'clock game against the Red Sox. We're going to be doing a watch party. And before we get going, we're proud parents, Scott.
Proud parents. Chests are puffing out.
Of Tyler and Dom, who are graduating. Dom's graduating from the Newhouse School up in Syracuse grad school. Tyler's graduating from Marist undergrad. They're both moving on to jobs. They're going to still be involved with Bronx Pinstripes, but they've been heavily involved while they're in college as interns for the show and interns for the site. They are moving on to bigger and better things. Pretty legitimate entities for both these guys. Tyler's got a job lined up at ESPN and Dom at MLB Network and NHL Network.
Yeah, no, it's great. And congratulations to Tyler and Dom. Super proud of these guys. They've been working their butts off. A lot of times you don't see what they do, but they've been busting their butt behind the scenes with all the things that we do on this show and more things on the website as well. So congratulations to them. If you're on Twitter or social media, just give them a shout. But at some point we're going to look for we're going to need another intern, I think. Marist has been good to us. Marist, we're two for two from Marist. So if you go to Marist, get in touch with Tyler or Dom if you know them, and tell them that you're interested in interning, because at some point Tyler is going to be bogged down by the corporate machine at ESPN.
I feel like, you know how in football they talk about the coaching trees, like Belichick's coaching tree or Parcells' coaching.
Right.
I feel like at a certain point we're gonna have a podcast tree
or a sports media
tree.
I like it. Dom's starting his own tree too, actually, with recruiting Tyler.
Right, but it started with us, and then
he now has a branch of his own.
So he's like the Eric Mangini.
Yeah, but that's disrespectful to Dom.
All right, so let's talk about last Thursday. So it was the last game against Seattle. Yankees ended up winning three or four against Seattle, and something happened in this game where D. Gordon got hit. And he had a quote after. He was pissed off. You could tell during that game he was pissed off. He was screaming as he left the field.
Screaming in agony?
Screaming in anger, I think. Because if you hear his quote, it was the second time he threw up at my head. He's talking about Jay Happ. You've got to get that ball down. If you can't throw that pitch, don't throw it. I've got a family, so you need to get the ball down. That was twice. And then Happ responded, I think, a day later. He was potentially injured, and I don't know if he will miss time or what, but it was kind of an ignorant comment. First of all, it wasn't anywhere near where he indicated it was, and I don't have a reputation for that. The pitch was definitely up. It was a little in. I think it hit him in the hand. I would not say he was hunting his head because, first of all, Jay Happ does not seem like someone who's going to be hunting any heads. Seems like the most mild-mannered guy. If he's going to hit you, he's going to probably hit you right in the back, like
middle of the back
or right in the ass, right in the thigh muscle. So it's not going to like do any major long-term damage. So this was kind of like D. Gordon just mad for, I think,
just
no
mad.
Reason.
Just being mad. Just looking for something to be mad at. And the whole I have a family comment, like, okay.
Yeah, you they all have families. They all have
everybody has
careers.
Families.
Like,
yeah, just because you got hit by a baseball when you're playing professional baseball doesn't mean you need to cry about your livelihood and your family after someone goes up and in on you. It's just it's become part of like the whiny mentality of some of these guys, I think, and it's part of the game. The ball was definitely not being thrown at him intentionally. So the fact that he thought Jay Happ of all people was throwing the ball at him intentionally is pretty comical, I think. So, yeah, I think it's just him. And, you know, look at your dad, bro. Your dad, Tom Gordon, was one of like those guys who had a bit of a reputation, and people respected him. You know, he always had that scowl on. It's not like he would never pitch in. He pitched in.
Different era, though.
Different era, but you're in the family. Like, you know, throwing stones and, you know, when you live in a glass house here, your family, the one you're talking about, also pitched in. So let's relax.
I think that was – it just sounds like he was pissed off about something else. I mean, I get if you're pissed off.
It was a bad day. Yeah.
If you get hit and you got to leave a game and you're injured potentially going on the IL.
That sucks.
It sucks. Like, and I get I would be pissed off too. So totally understandable, but I don't think it was intentional at all. But this
you want to know what was intentional? When he took steroids and got suspended, that was intentional.
Nah, what was his excuse? Did he not know it was in his like milkshake or something like that?
I don't know.
One of those guys.
He's disrespected Jay Happ, so I'm going to disrespect him.
I didn't know I couldn't do that. The old Chappelle excuse.
Yeah. Whoops. I didn't know I couldn't do that.
But this was a good game for Happ because the Yes actually talked about this during the game. Happ had struggled pretty much every start out at Yankee Stadium. On the road, he'd been pretty good, but at Yankee Stadium, he got touched up with the exception of that Boston start. So this was a good game for him, get back on track. And I don't think there's any trend there because last season he was excellent at Yankee Stadium in the second half of the year. So I don't think it's a something where it's like a Sonny Gray where he just can't pitch at Yankee Stadium. I think just the nature of the beast, the nature of the stadium and the type of pitcher Happ is, he's a fastball pitcher who gives up fly balls. Well, at Yankee Stadium, guess what? You're going to give up more home runs when you give up fly balls because it's a shorter ballpark, shorter stands in a lot of areas of that ballpark.
Yeah, he's going to pitch to it. He's going to pitch around it. Plus, I mean, we talked about this in the past with Happ and some of his poor performances. I mean, he was touched up with a little bit of bad luck early in the season with just horrible weather. And you know, it's good to see that he was able to come back. And anyway, it's a big game because the Yankees are going for the win against a good team after they just, you know, beat a team with a winning record. They're trying
after
to back
they
that
just
up.
Got Kikuchi'd the night before. I mean, that after was an ugly Kikuchi'd. Loss from many levels with the Pine Tar, with getting blown out. So coming back and winning the series after that happens, I think was a big game.
You want to know an interesting little tidbit? I have a buddy who I actually met when I was up in Boston for a little bit, and he's a Seattle Mariners fan. He didn't even know anything about the Pine Tar stuff. He's from Seattle. He's from Washington.
Okay.
He didn't know anything about the Pine Tar.
Does he follow the team?
Oh, yeah.
If he's following Seattle outlets, they're just probably not mentioning it?
They must not have said anything.
Well, I had someone tweet me after it happened, after we recorded. So this must have been Friday or something. He tweeted me a picture that he took from a screenshot from a game earlier in the season, and you can see Kikuchi has Pine Tar under his hat.
Yeah, I mean, we knew he was not a first-time offender.
But this is the thing. Say that was, I don't know what game it was. Say Kikuchi was pitching against the Oakland A's or something. That's not going to go viral like it goes viral when it's with the against the Yankees.
No, Yankees Twitter was on this one.
Right. So
we make more noise than the Oakland fans.
But what we talked about is there's no way this was the first time he was doing it. And there's no way that the teams, the inner baseball guys of these teams didn't know about this.
Right. It's probably in their scouting
report. So the Yankees going into that game probably had a note that Kikuchi uses something on his hat. And they chose not to do anything about it, which is understandable. Again, like, I get why they don't. We talked about this last episode because who knows what their pitchers are doing. I don't want to open up that can of worms kind of thing.
Right. And that's the thing. I think if you start doing that and, you know, the unwritten rules of baseball, if you rat someone out, then you're a fair game for everybody else to go after. You know, that's one of those potential unwritten rules. So you don't want to disturb the inner peace of what the baseball gods are doing, and the boys of the game are trying to set these rules. So you don't want to expose yourself or your guys either, put them in an uncomfortable situation.
That's kind of funny though, that like the Seattle media let's ignore that. That never happened.
I don't know how much he watched. Like, this was the next morning, but so I don't know how much he had actually watched. But you know, in the broadcast or
would you
at
text
any point
them
that
like
night,
what the hell? What's your boy up to?
No, he texted me bragging about it, and I'm like, okay, I'm like, yeah.
Wait, bragging about
I said Kikuchi. I said Kikuchi, son of a bitch, or something like that. And he goes, yeah, he was on yesterday. I was like, oh,
I kind of respect that. Just ignoring it, just trolling you. I kind of like that.
I don't think he's doing that though. I think he.
It might be unintentional, but I think it's effective.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I also want to direct you guys. So I wrote an article about Jordan Montgomery, who we saw throwing at the Yankees minor league complex on Friday. And this is interesting because we hadn't really seen video of him throwing. So he's on track to come back sometime in August if nothing goes wrong in his rehab, which is great.
We're going to get a lot of players back in August.
Right. Yeah, there's going to be 40 people.
Everybody's coming back in August,
roster in August. But I wrote an article and I kind of stumbled upon this. So as I was looking up Jordan Montgomery's 2017 season, because that was really the full season he had, his rookie season. He had a great rookie season. I noticed his Statcast metrics were very similar to Jay Happ's. Very similar in almost all categories. Barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, walk rate, strikeout rate. Very, very similar results to Jay Happ, which on the surface of it, fantastic. Jay Happ's a good pitcher. He's been a good pitcher in the American League East for a long time. So if that's Jordan Montgomery's potential, like, that's great. Not an ace, not a number one, maybe not a number two, but a really solid number three pitcher. But what I think is interesting, and this is in the article, they're completely different pitchers as far as how they get their results. Because Jordan Montgomery, yeah, he throws his fastball, but maybe 20% of the time. He's a lot of changeups. His curveball's his best pitch. So he uses his secondary stuff a lot. Jay Happ, on the other hand, has been four-seam fastball pretty much his whole career. That's his bread and butter pitch. So they go about it in different ways, but they're getting very similar results. I think it was an interesting comp. So go check out that article.
The way that they do it as well, as far as just mechanically, is extremely different too. Because Happ throws three-quarter lefty. Yeah. You know, you see him more over his, the angle of his shoulder towards first base. Whereas Montgomery is like, you know, Mike Mussina as a lefty, he goes directly over top, and you see him getting on top of that ball, and that's why
he had the Pettit comparisons.
Yeah, and that's also why the curveball just looks so much more dramatic, because he's coming from such a high angle that, you know, when it drops off the shelf, it really falls a good distance. But no, I mean, that's what you were shitting on me when I was comparing it to Keuchel of now, and I still think that kind of plays. I mean, well, if Monty were to come back and you see what similar numbers to that, then you're getting, you know, a relatively similar to what you'd think you'd get from Keuchel.
But maybe
I know
now
the track
Keuchel.
Record's not there.
That's maybe what about now Keuchel, but peak Keuchel.
Oh, I was certainly never referring to peak Keuchel. Peak Keuchel was like our arch nemesis.
That's fair. That's more fair. I think when you had said it the first time, I was like, well, prime Keuchel was much better than Jay Happ or John Montgomery.
Wasn't referring to prime.
All right. So like we said, yeah, 2 out of 3 in Tampa. Big series, and I think the Friday night game was, you could tell there was a little bit more juice for both of those teams. They knew it was a big series, even though it was only the middle of May, but this was an intense game, and it was back and forth the whole time. And really, the pivotal point in that game, the turning point, was when Ottavino comes in the seventh inning and he loads the bases with no outs. At that point in the game, the Yankees have a one-run lead. Loads the bases, nobody out. He couldn't control his slider. He was leaving it outside to left-handed batters. It was not biting. And no one was warming up until the bases were loaded. And on the one hand, I'm like, all right, you can clearly see this guy doesn't have it. What are you doing? But the alternative is Jonathan Holder was warming up. So I'm like, God, do I want to go to Jonathan Holder in a bases loaded situation where I want to try and like squeak it out here with Ottavino? He left Ottavino in, ends up striking out Pham and getting a massive double play up the middle on a nice play by LeMahieu.
It was a really nice play by LeMahieu making that unassisted. And that's a tough read. Go to the bag yourself, make the quick flip and try to get that double play. But he went to the bag himself, took that extra step. And that's, you know, it's so bang, bang. You just have to feel that thing out. It's all instincts at that point. And then making a strong throw, because that's a hard throw across your body with your momentum going towards home plate and putting some juice on it to get to first base. So that was a great play. Ottavino was pumped up. LeMahieu, you know, just business as usual. I guess he
was going to say, LeMahieu, did he maybe cracked a smile? Maybe. Maybe he packed a lip after that.
You know, it's interesting because when you're looking at these bases loaded jams, we've seen it a couple times now in the last couple weeks when Boone stays with the guy. And Britton walked three guys. He walked two guys, allowed to pitch to the third guy, walked him, loaded the bases himself.
San Fran? Was that San Fran?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if it was San Fran or Anaheim, but It was one of those games, and but he stayed with them. He's showing that he's staying with these guys even if they're not at their best or you know have the most control. He still thinks in these high pressure situations that they're able to do it. So I think it's interesting, and it's more of the evolution of Boone and just me like putting down notes in the back of my head of what he's doing throughout the season, because you know this was one of those situations where if he did this in the playoffs, we'd be killing him. That Ottavino is still in this situation.
It's all about what happens, right? Yeah. If Ottavino doesn't get out of it, he gives up a bases clearing double. You're saying, what the hell?
Of course, but you're also playing with very. I don't like looking at that at the same time too, because
that's the only way to look at it.
But when you're looking at the Britton situation, Britton had walked two guys, and then the decision was to leave Britton in or take him out, and it was San Francisco because he was up against Belt, who was a lefty. And
He pulled him.
No, he let him pitch to Belt because Britton, he was a lefty, and let him in because Ottavino was coming in, and Ottavino came in and made the got out of the jam. Anyway, but he walked the guy. So did that work or did that not work? Ottavino got out of the inning after he walked the guy, but the actual at bat that he let him stay in, he walked the guy, so he put himself in more of a situation. Either way, it doesn't matter at this point because they both worked out. I'm just saying, you're playing with fire, and if we start seeing this in the playoffs, getting greedy, leaving CeCe in to get to the bottom of the order, things like that. Like I just, it's getting a little cute for me. Worked this time, but it's playing with fire.
I also think this might be a product of the fact that the Yankees are down two of the bullpen arms they thought were going to be there all year. And Chad Green, I know Chad Green came back, but he wasn't on the roster in this game, and he's been bad. And Betances. So. Yeah. If you have Chad Green and Betances being who you expect them to be on top of Chapman, Britton, Ottavino, and Canely, and I know Canely was an unexpected surprise this year, so maybe the Canely and Green thing is almost a wash, right?
Yeah, I think Canely and Green are a wash because Canely was...
But you're still down a Betances at that point.
So the other interesting thing, you said Holder warming up in the seventh when Ottavino loaded the bases. Well, they used Britton and Chapman. So Holder was coming in ahead of Britton in that inning as well.
I don't know.
These are just notes I'm putting in the back of my head. I'm not saying they're negative or positive. I think it's just interesting because everybody likes to look at what Boone does in the postseason. And I think it's important for us to just, you know, register the information to see how he's doing things during the regular season, because it's going to be indicative of what he does. It's just showing more of who he is and what he's becoming, I think, throughout the his career as a manager. And you know, obviously we're in year two of Aaron Boone, and I think he's learned a lot and progressed in a lot of ways. I think you could tell that the game is I don't even know if this is a real thing, but slowed down for him. Is that is that Is that a
yeah? That's what
enough?
They say. That's what
is
that's
that cliche
that's
enough
very
for
cliche.
You.
Yeah, that's why but, the guys who succeed in the postseason, the game doesn't speed up on them.
But
Scott.
As a manager, the game has slowed down for him. The strategy of the game has slowed down for him. Yeah. He's like ahead of the game. But I do think it's interesting to see how he is using the bullpen because it's going to be a storyline throughout.
What I think the Holder situation was for is so he loads Ottavino loads the bases. I think Boone had every intention of letting Ottavino pitch until
Holder
he at least,
was pop up.
Yes. I think the only way Holder's getting in that game is if Ottavino gave up two or three runs there, and then they just need someone to get out of the inning. Because yeah. otherwise, there's no way that Holder is ahead of the depth chart on than Britton. So right. if you're really just looking to get out of the jam with the lead intact, or at the very least in a tie game, you don't go to Holder. You go to Britton in that situation.
Britton
is still sitting on the bench.
Or they're saying that Britton, you know, with potential command issues this year, which he has had
he's
more
had,
of.
He had on Sunday. Yep. He put two guys on Sunday.
So that's also a thing where they wanted to see Britton with a clean inning rather than, you know, in a jam, maybe Holder is, in Boone's eyes, a better opportunity to get out of a jam than Britton with you know, his walks. I don't know.
And the game on Friday, it was a huge win for the reason that the fact that Canley, Ottavino, Britton, and Chapman all pitched. That made 2 days in a row. So they were very unlikely to pitch in Saturday's game. You're going with a short bullpen on Saturday with a starting pitcher that we know doesn't go deep, Sabathia. So you're really in a bad spot. If they had blown Friday night's game, it would have been a really tough game on Saturday. Then you're like, oh, shit, we got to win this game, and we're probably not going to win it. Whereas
right.
Friday, once you saw how the game was evolving and they were going to have to use all their big guys, became almost like a must-win game.
Well, yeah, and also because it was, what, the third time out for a lot of them? And so they were going to be completely unavailable on Saturday as well. So
that's what I'm saying, yeah.
yeah.
Going with a short bullpen, a known short bullpen.
And you know, you're going up against Glasnow, who's their number one pitcher this year. I mean, I know Snell's their ace, probably. You know, if anybody asks who's their number one pitcher is within their organization, they would say Snell. But Glasnow was coming in with big momentum, lowest ERA in the league. Again, six wins coming in. Those are earned six wins with that ERA. Like, the guy has been pitching well. So they got through their number one guy. Yes, he ended up going on the IL afterwards, so that potentially did have something to come into it. But they knew Snell was also on Sunday. So you lose that game, then you're going in short on Saturday, and then you got Snell on Sunday. Potential disaster in Tampa.
Absolutely.
Got to win that game at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it set the tone. Even Saturday was a punt game almost, and they could have won it. It was a tie game into the sixth inning, and then just a weird inning in the sixth inning because LeMahieu, there's a couple plays that he does not make. Where is a throw down to second base. Sanchez is throwing down to second base. Sanchez gets the error, but it's a ball that LeMahieu, even after the game, said, I have to catch, and he didn't catch it. So that's one. And then there was two plays up the middle where LeMahieu, one of them he's out of position because of a shift. The other one is just like it's in a weird spot, and he doesn't make the plays. They're not errors. He just doesn't make the plays at first base. We're just so we've become conditioned to LeMahieu doing everything right. When he doesn't right. do something right, we're like, oh, what the hell happened? A glitch in
but
the
But that's
matrix.
Not even not him doing it right, too. It's also out of position or just,
no, he just
you know,
doesn't at, make. He just didn't
potentially
make
asking
play.
Too much. Asking too much for a guy like that to make
well,
that play
after
as well.
The game, he said, I need to make those plays. And
that's
maybe
exactly
not
the Sanchez.
That's exactly what LeMahieu's going to say, though. Every time
sure.
he's going to say, I need to make those plays. It doesn't matter if the thing is like what it is. It's a ball. He's got to run out to center field to catch it. He's going to say, I got to make that play.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, and he had a home run. That's two. Getting closer to 20 now.
One, yeah, he's on a one per month pace.
This is no. He's hitting it early. He hit it early in May now. So he's fighting that power stroke.
Okay.
This was a home run to dead center field.
It was.
Okay?
It was. I was surprised that he put one out because Tampa's not a small park.
No, and Chirinos, who I believe was pitching, knew it immediately too. Like that was a no doubter by LeMahieu. So LeMahieu's scaring opponents, their pitching staff, everybody's
looking
at him.
2 down, 18 to go.
I like it. I think he's gonna, you know, the weather's gonna get warmer. The ball's gonna start flying. They're gonna go over right field. So yeah, I'm expecting a big home run production from LeMahieu in the second half.
The other thing from this game is Voit gets plunked right after that LeMahieu homer, and CeCe, this was the sixth inning. He was pretty much done at that point. He knew. So you could tell he had a big fat lipper in.
He's itching on the top step.
He is just, give me an excuse to brawl right now. Give me a friggin' excuse. Mm-hmm. And after the game, he was pissed. Meredith asked him about it, and he goes, "It's stupid. I mean, we did this last year. What are you guys doing? There's one guy you don't mess with is Sabathia, and I would not be surprised. They didn't do it then. They didn't do it in this series, which I think is smart. You want to make a statement by winning the series. You're not trying to make a statement by plunking anybody at this point. So if there's going to be a retaliation, it might happen next weekend at Yankee Stadium.
Right. Yeah. Well, and also CC was out of the game, right? So they're like, oh, we're not CC would definitely throw at us. But now
especially
he's
on Saturday where it's a tie game and you're down three bullpen guys anyway. You're not trying to get ejected from a game.
Right. Well, so that's the thing. Like the game was tied. Do you think that Voit got plunked intentionally? Because Sanchez got hit as well, which I think, like, I looked at that replay 1,000 times and it barely even looks like he got hit.
So from a logic standpoint, it makes no sense for Chirinos to hit him. There's no outs and you just gave up a game-tying home run. Why would you willingly put a guy on base? But it was so blatantly up and in, like, right after a home run on a fastball right up to the shoulder. Like, so on one hand, I'm like, nah, there's no way that he would be stupid enough to hit a guy in that scenario. On the other hand, I'm like, looking with my eyes, that looked intentional.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's an anger, like frustration pitch that got away personally. But, you know, I like the fact that they all think it hit him on purpose. So that's good. This is good fuel. I think they should take it. And I think they should use that at Yankee Stadium. And let's get some fire going. I like fire. I like emotion. I like people pissed off at each other. Makes more fun to watch.
I don't think the Gary Sanchez was intentional.
The Gary Sanchez was definitely not intentional. His hands were practically over the plate.
So that's the flip side
argument.
I'm
still not even 1,000 convinced that it hit him.
The flip side argument is that Chirinos didn't have his command, and that's why the ball got away from him.
Oh, and there was a home run also hit the batter before that, too. So obviously didn't pitch the ball where he wanted it to. So maybe, I don't know, maybe the ball wasn't going where he wanted it to.
All I know is I'm listening to the post-game comments of Sabathia and Luke Voit, and they talked about it like it was intentional.
Because you see a home run, leave the park, tie game, next guy gets hit. Obviously, you think it's intentional. It feels intentional. Something good just happened, and now you hit us.
If they're talking about it internally with each other like it's intentional, then I expect there to be something down the line.
Probably, yeah. If they thought it was intentional, then they will stand up for that. There's no doubt.
Gleyber Torres. So I've noticed he's making mental errors.
Again?
Yeah. So he ran through a stop sign on Saturday, ended up scoring, which is funny. He gets caught off second base. He gets picked off on a throw behind him. The catcher throws behind him, and he gets caught off second base. There's just mental lapses, and I don't want to say he doesn't have an attitude problem. It's nothing like a Gary Sanchez thing where it's just like he's not hustling. Nothing like that. It's just we noticed this last year.
Gary Sanchez
year
was hurt, okay?
Right.
There was no hustle. There was no hustle gate.
We talked about this last year with Gleyber, and it was when he was not fully healthy in the second half. But we just felt like there was moments in games where he lost focus and lost concentration and mistakes like getting picked off at second base or running through a stop. How do you run through a stop sign?
Yeah, you don't look at your coach?
That's the second time he didn't look at his coach because I forget what game it was. It might have been Friday or one of the games against Seattle where I think it was a game against Seattle. Nevin was waving him home and he wasn't looking at him and he just stopped at third base.
Yeah. That's a real thing. Like guys not picking up their coach and they're just either running with their head down or looking back at a play.
It's not acceptable.
It's not really what you're supposed to do as a professional baseball player on the base paths. You're supposed to be looking at the other, you know, professionals that are coaching you and giving you signs on what to do because they have a good view of what's happening.
Yeah.
And as you're rounding second base, it's hard to see what's happening unless the ball is in
front of you.
And
if you just do
what
your coach says, and if it doesn't work out, guess what? No one blames you. They blame the coach.
Yeah.
If he's waving you home and you get thrown out at home, the coach gets blamed. You don't get blamed. Unless
Luke Voit. Nobody was yelling at Luke Voit when he got thrown out by, 30 feet.
Right. Unless you trip and fall on your face. Like,
yeah, then you got sniped.
Yeah.
But if you run through a sign and you get pegged, now we got to talk to you. Now we got to blame you.
So what do you think this is with Gleyber?
I just think it's exactly like you said. It's a lack of just a little mental lapse. I think it's almost an immaturity thing. It's just
still, he's not a rookie anymore.
I think he floats off sometimes. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's thinking of a fight he and his girl had, or a good time he and his girl had, or he's looking in the dugout because someone's being funny, or he sees something in the stands, or you know, he's worried about one of the Tampa lights falling on his head, or, you know, I don't know what it is. I think maybe he just mentally floats occasionally and loses that little bit of focus. I'm not worried about it. It's just one of those things I think that sometimes young players do. And it's weird that it happens to him noticeably, you know, because I think some guys can get away with it, but it's like the situation finds him when he's floating.
Well, we kind of, when he first came up, he looked like the most polished veteran we'd ever seen. And he was 21 years old, and we're like, holy crap. Like,
this, but these guy, happen out of nowhere and like very sporadically too. It's not like
bunches.
All the time.
It's almost like mental, they happen, his mental mistakes happen in bunches.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just something I noticed over the weekend. And yeah, you're right. The next thing that is going to happen in the Trop is one of those catwalks is going to follow. One of the ceilings just going to collapse in. It's going to deflate like someone let the air out of it.
A ray of sunshine is going to burn a hole through the middle of it and will shine down on the stadium. I don't know what the hell is going to happen to that place. I don't trust it. I'm going to be walking in with a hard hat on July 6th.
Tanaka, he showed up in a moment they really needed him. It was going for the series win against Blake Snell, and did he nut up. He pitched 7 innings on just 73 pitches. I thought maybe he would have gone longer. Maybe he was on a short leash since the 6th inning when he did give up the runs. He did get hit a little bit in the 6th inning, but he did back that up with a 4-pitch 7th. So exactly what the Yankees needed out of him, a dominant start. And the splitter, which we talked about last time, had been getting crushed all year. 182 batting average against. Hitters were 2-for-11 on his splitter. He threw 27 of them on Sunday, and he struck 3 of his strikeouts were on his splitter. So his splitter was more like the classic Tanaka split.
Yeah, and you know, 73 pitches is efficient. That's exactly what you want him around the plate, because when he's around that plate with his fastball and the other pitches, you start to see the splitter more effective as well. And I think that, you know, he threw it a lot. I mean, you look at that percentage, 27 pitches of 73, like that's a solid amount of splitters. And you know, maybe he reversed it for a start and saying, hey, I'm going to work off of this. If I can throw it if I can throw it effectively, then, you know, it can almost work as a fastball. You can do that occasionally, I think, if you're working off of your secondary pitch and start throwing your fastball more as complimentary to your splitter. I think you could occasionally do that. You certainly can't live like that. But if you're having trouble with a pitch and that's, you know, you're looking at what you've done all season long, and that's the splitter is where he's struggled, going to that splitter and making it more of a predominant pitch and working off of that, even it's kind of like, you know, gaming the opponent. You know what I mean? Like, they know to spit on it. They know if it's low in the zone, that they could spit on it, but now he's throwing it for strikes. Now he's throwing it a little bit differently, more consistently, more often, then, you know, it becomes a better pitch.
We kind of talked about that last episode. Like, why aren't hitters swinging at it? We were used to hitters swinging over the top of the splitter, and now they're either hitting it, which means he's leaving it up in the zone, or they're just not swinging at it at all. It was kind of weird what was going on.
Yeah, and whenever Tanaka's up in the zone, you know, things are bad. So if he's staying low in the zone where the fastball's low and then you're working off that effective splitter, that's good stuff. So he definitely threw it a lot more than he normally does, which is interesting. And I think that could be just a game tactic and scouting reports for what these guys were, or them just trying to mix it up and to go with something that Tampa maybe wasn't expecting.
Yeah, and maybe the key to Tanaka's success was he slept on a Sleep Number bed on Saturday night.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he got a great sleep.
Maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed but thought you couldn't afford one, but can you really afford another restless night's sleep? There's never been a better time to save on proven quality sleep. Now, during the Memorial Day sale, a Queen 360 Smart Bed starts at only $999. Scott, I know you got some house guests right now, and they're sleeping on those Sleep Number pillows, so they're probably going to wake up nice and rested. Also, if you are sharing a bed with somebody, couples disagree on mattress firmness. Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so it's just right for the both of you. The Sleep Number 360 smart beds are so smart, they sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night.
Sleep Number has been ranked highest in customer service and satisfaction with mattresses by J.D. Power and has the 2018 award. You can go check out their information on jdpower.com. again, Andrew noted, mentioned this. I got family in town. They're all sleeping on Sleep Number pillows. A couple of them got the mattress. So everybody is well rested, except for now they're waking up because Kemp is awake and they're babysitting, which is great. So they're well rested to take care of a toddler. Come in Memorial. There's a Memorial Day sale and save over $1,000 on a Sleep Number 360 special edition smart bed for temperature balancing comfort at an exceptional value. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the nearest one closest to you at sleepnumber.com/Bronx.
So what are we? We're like 30 minutes, 35 minutes into this podcast, and people who are listening are probably like, how are these two not mentioned Gio Urshela yet?
Yeah. I mean, because it's become it's not different. It's not new.
I don't know how to explain Gio Urshela, and I've decided I'm done trying to explain Gio Urshela. I'm just going to enjoy the moments because I still think they're not going to last. I'm not a hater. I'm just being realistic about this, but what I'm watching on the field is defying logic. So I'm just going to enjoy the Gio Urshela movement in the Bronx right now.
So I don't know. You start getting to a point now where you see a guy that's building up a sample size, building up sample size in certain situations, runners in scoring position being one of them. And now we all know what he's done with the glove. We've heard about off-season winter adjustments with what he's doing at the plate, the approach at the plate. And you're seeing a guy that's hitting the peak of his athletic career, right? Like that you hit your peak of your athletic career in your late 20s. There are plenty of guys that has said, you know, physically I feel the best I've ever felt. I am able to do things differently now. I feel more confident. I feel good with my body where I am. My defense is taking care of itself. I'm going to focus on the offense. And we're seeing now, I think, the fruit of what the labors have done in the offseason. This man has made adjustments and has given an opportunity, been given an opportunity, and now is taking advantage of it. So why are we to say that this isn't the new Gio Urshela and this is here to stay?
Because he's 27 years old and he spent 2 years in Cleveland and he had a 56 OPS plus. That means he was half of what a major league player should have been. And then he went to Toronto for a year and he had a 70 OPS plus. So he's 30% worse than the league average. And now he's with the Yankees. He got a 144 OPS plus. He's 44% better than the league average. It just doesn't line up. I don't know. Maybe it is the new Gio Urshela, but I don't know if I'm ready to say that after a month and a half. What I am ready to say is the Yankees need to ride this hot hand. He's doing things. He's coming through in the clutch. Like you mentioned, runners in scoring position. He's hitting .407 with runners in scoring position, 11 for 27 with 12 RBIs. He's coming up with big hits. It's not just, oh, he's driving in runs when it doesn't matter. Thursday, a 2 RBI single for insurance runs that the Yankees ended up needing because Chapman gives up a home run late in that game. Hit a ball that was up near his eyeballs and down the right field line. It's like, how do these angles, the geometry doesn't make any sense how he hit that ball.
That's the ball that hit Gary Sanchez on Saturday.
Yeah. And then the go-ahead RBI single in the sixth inning on Friday. It was the difference in the game, the offensive difference in the game on Friday in Tampa. And then more insurance runs with a double on Sunday in Tampa. He's coming through every game.
He's been phenomenal, unbelievable. And the ball that he hit on Thursday night is just one of those, like, holy shit moments. Like, I can't believe he got that. I can't believe he got the barrel on that ball. Can't believe he hit it with any kind of force down the line. Like, the guy played that pitch. First of all, I don't know why you're swinging at that pitch. Like, there's just a whole bunch of things, but it doesn't matter because he did. He chopped it into right field, and it was a humongous hit. So he's coming through in the clutch. He's doing big things. We have notes in here. Runners in scoring position. He's hitting .407, 11 for 27 with 12 RBIs. That is a guy who is confident at the plate, who people are pitching to as well, walking guys to get to Gio Urshela, and he's making them pay. So the guy's confident up at the plate, not only in non-pressure situations, but you put him in a pressure situation, and he's hitting balls that most major league guys are not making contact with.
It's, after the game on Friday, Ottavino called him the team MVP so far. Do you agree with that? I disagree with that. I'd still say to this point it's been LeMahieu.
Yeah.
But Urshela is a close second.
You know, it's hard to put it on one guy because there's been such a next man up mentality where the team has really rallied behind everybody else. You know, it seems like there's another guy, and like Urshela's been that guy a lot. But it's hard to give a one MVP award to so far what they've done, because, you know, Domingo Germán definitely has got to be up there as well with a guy that's solidified that rotation when it's been in shambles at certain points. So there's a lot of guys. I think there's a lot of credit to go around, but yeah, he's one of them.
And it's going to start getting interesting because we're going to see guys coming back soon. Hicks is coming back, they say Monday. So as tonight's today. Game, yep. But some point this week, he'll be back. He was rehabbing in Scranton. Someone's going to go down. It's going to be Talkman or Mabin. My bet is Talkman.
I mean, Talkman needs to go down. I've seen people on social media talking about, oh, he's a lefty. Let's keep him up because who gives a shit? He's a lefty that doesn't know how to swing the bat. Like,
you know who else is a lefty?
He's gotten a hit occasionally. Hicks, you know who else? Switch hitter.
Hicks. Yeah, Hicks can hit lefty. So yeah,
I'm not worried about the lineup construction with Mike Talkman in the lineup. That's not something I'm concerned about.
Big hit off Blake Snell Sunday.
Yeah,
almost
great.
Hit it out. 2 inches away from hitting it out.
I'm glad he got that hit. That's, you know, that's good. We'll take that hit.
He was very emotional standing on second base. And the reason I think is because he knows he's getting sent down once Hicks comes up.
Well, he knows he's up against the wall. You know, he just, as I quote our boy Aaron Judge, as I wear the t-shirt, his back is against the wall because there are people coming back and he's got to show that he's the guy. And because he's got a lefty bat, does that make him more attractive?
Mabin's been good. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think Mabin's, so.
Mabin's
like you
been
said,
very good.
You can't go lefty righty. You're not constructing the last man on your roster because he's a lefty or a righty. When you look at the numbers back to back, and both can play outfield positions, and both can play outfield positions well. And Mabin has hit, and he's a good base runner. Talkman, he's hitting like 200, and I know he's had a couple of moments where he hit a big home run.
He's been better at home than he's been on the road because he plays the Yankee Stadium where he can get the ball out of the stadium, you know, better than any other park.
I think it's going to be an outfielder that goes down just from pure roster construction standpoint, and I think it's going to be Talkman. I believe he still has options, and I don't know Mabin's situation. I know he came over from Cleveland where he was in the minors, so his situation might be they can't send him down. I don't know that, but I think it's going to be Talkman. Kind of a wild card in all of this is Andujar. He's not looked right at the plate. His bat looks slow. He's been mostly DHing. When he's in the field, he doesn't look right in the field either. I don't know. Maybe they send Andujar down just to get more rehab games.
Just to get rehab games or just to get right down in Scranton. I don't think they're going to do that. That would be a really interesting move if they did that, just so that he could get more at-bats and get some playing time. And work his kinks out, not at the major league level. But, you know, who are we playing? Who are we playing at home?
Baltimore.
Right. So what's the difference in sending you down to Scranton or playing against the Baltimore Orioles at home? Actually, I think it would be better for him to play against the Baltimore Orioles in front of the Yankee Stadium crowd to get your mojo back, because you could build a lot more confidence. You're going up against a AAA lineup anyway. Might as well do it at Yankee Stadium. Get that momentum. Find out, you know, how you can work out those kinks and get back on track. So I think it's actually a really good opportunity for Andujar to work through some struggles with the Baltimore Orioles coming into town, because we're not losing a game to the Baltimore Orioles, should not lose a game to the Baltimore Orioles for the rest of the season. And then my prediction will be accurate. And then pretty much all of my predictions will be accurate.
But you're not going to, with what we just talked about with Urshela, you're not going to see Andujar playing much third base.
No, I don't care. He can DH. They can work him in. In fact, they can, you know, Urshela could DH as well. They could see some mixing around, but I think they're going to get him at bats against the Baltimore Orioles. If he doesn't go down to Scranton, which I don't expect it, it wouldn't surprise me like completely, but it would surprise me. I expect them to get him in a lot against the Baltimore Orioles. That's the team you get him in on to work this stuff out. Because look, the Yankees, you're expecting Urshela to not be sustainable. You know, I think most people who have seen what he's done and have seen things don't expect him to continue this. Or there's the other side, and they're saying maybe he's Luke Voit. and he does continue this. And the guy does continue to be productive, and Cashman's just a wizard. And that's also very possible and probably true to some extent. But the team is better when Andujar is hitting. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anybody would argue.
We haven't seen the Cashman get on your knees and praise Cashman articles yet about Gio Urshela. We saw them about Luke Voit, where all the nerds knew the underlying metrics on Luke Voit.
Because the nerds don't want him to do well. Because the nerds don't want Urshela to continue this.
Why?
Because then they are because then they get thrown out the window. Why,
oh, the metrics get thrown out the window. If
why would the nerds all hate Gio Urshela right now? They're like, this guy is ruining our lives. He's making us
he's
feel
spitting
small.
In the face of sabermetrics.
Yeah, he's saying the nerd in the tunnel is stupid, has no idea what he's doing. He could take his glasses and his computer and get the hell out of my face because I'm better than these numbers. And he's proving to everybody else what they what the scout saw. The scout saw something. The scout saw what he was doing differently in the winter, the adjustments that he was making. And they saw that he was going to make these adjustments. The nerds didn't.
I am, as we've been talking for the last like 3 minutes, I've been trying to look up player options and I cannot find them. So if anyone knows where to find that stuff, let me know. But Stanton, so I think Andujar stays on the roster, but I think when and if Stanton comes back, like when, we don't know because we don't have a timetable on Stanton. And he's giving cryptic interviews after games where he's I saw specialists and he doesn't really answer any questions directly. And we don't know how long his rehab is really going to take at this point. Boone said there's no timetable on Stanton, but he is set to do limited baseball activities. So Stanton could be 2 weeks away. He could be 4 weeks away. He could be 2 months away. I have no clue. No one has any clue. But I think once Stanton comes back, let's just say a month from now, June 15th, Stanton comes back. And Duhar's still trying to figure stuff out. That's when we get a time where it's like, all right, and they got to make a decision on Andujar.
Yeah. Make a decision on him they're going to, maybe he's still injured. Maybe the labrum is part of
it. Who knows if he's not hitting, then what? There's no really point to Andujar if he's not hitting.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a fair assessment when you're talking about a player that's known for his offense and you have a guy that's playing gold glove caliber defense. That's currently playing in the same position right now. That's also hitting. People have been talking about Wally Pippen, this whole thing. Like, is he getting Wally Pippen right now?
I don't think he's getting Wally Pippen. Because
if this continues and Urshela continues to hit like this and plays that defense, I mean, nobody – is this a real conversation that we're having? Because it's going to be at some point.
Maybe he's getting Wally Pippen for 2019, but I don't think he's getting Wally Pippen for 2020 and beyond.
So if Urshela continues this the entire season – And Andujar does not come back fully healthy, and Urshela is now a guy that can play at an offensive level that's respectable and above average on a major league level, but plays also a gold glove defense. You're telling me that that's not going to go into the back of their minds?
Of course it will.
Not into the back of their minds, in the forefront of their minds.
Yeah.
And be on the back pages of all the newspapers saying, okay, now this is the guy. Why wouldn't it be the guy?
Then what will happen is Andujar and Urshela will come in battling for third base in 2020.
Yeah. Well, there's no other place to put Andujar. That's the thing. Urshela's a third baseman. We haven't seen him play anywhere else. We know he's a third baseman. Could he go to first base? Probably.
The only other place for Andujar other than DH is first base. If Luke Voit is... we've never seen it, but he can play first base. I'm sure if you give him an offseason, he can play first base. Luke Voit can play first base, and that dude sucks at defense. So
A-Rod, who was a gold glove fielder at shortstop.
But he tried to do it in the middle of a season, and he was 41 years old at that point. What I'm saying is you're dealing with Luke Voit's very mediocre defense at first base. You dealt with mediocre to below average defense at third base last year in Duhar because he was raking. So if he is going to hit again, you're going to put him in the lineup somewhere.
Yeah, I guess so. You're being forced to make him a DH essentially. That's what you're doing.
The problem is they have Stanton. Stanton who they want to DH a bunch. They want to give other guys
Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge. All of these guys that they need time at DH. But Greg Bird's there too. Don't worry, he's coming back too. Remember?
I don't even remember who asked me this question. Over under on at bats for Greg Bird the rest of his Yankees career, 25. What are you taking?
25. I think I'm going to take the over because I think
it seems like spring training at bats. Those don't count.
I think this is the last year we're going to see him. So
you think he's going to get more than 25 at bats the rest of the year?
I think he's going to come back and it's if he
that's
comes
like
back,
five games, that's like 5 games.
Yeah. If he comes back, I think he's going to get them. And it seems like he's coming back at this point.
He's walking on a treadmill now. That's his rehab. He's walking on a treadmill.
Sounds like Jacoby Ellsbury.
Meanwhile, Didi is just running circles around everybody in rehabbing. He's going to start DHing in extended spring games on May 20th. And this got me thinking. So what if Didi, they bring Didi back a couple weeks earlier than they would have otherwise, and he just DHs?
It's stupid.
That's what the Angels are doing with Ohtani.
Yeah, but Ohtani is – that's such a weird situation over there in the first place. Like I don't even know why they're messing around with him being a two-way player. There's definitely something in that contract because at this point, like last year when he blew out his arm – or his elbow, I thought for sure, like, that's it. We're done seeing him as a pitcher. This guy's going to hit now. Obviously, they're trying to build him back up as a pitcher, but he's still going to hit. It's confusing to me what they're doing. So that leads me to believe that there's something in the contract where they made a deal with him and saying, we will stick to this for X amount of time. Because logically, it makes no sense. You're playing with fire. Didi coming in just to hit makes no sense, especially with the roster that we have, the amount of infielders that are here and outfielders and like people coming back and like now we're going to fit another guy into the DH spot. No, they're going to wait till Didi is fully healthy, which he probably already is. We're just waiting for it because he's a bionic man and he excels at everything he does.
He's only starting to play an extended spring game.
That's just because they're letting him play now. He's been probably like,
okay, but what I'm saying, he's going to play a couple weeks of extended spring games. He's going to get some action at shortstop. Then he's going to go to probably Scranton and play a week of games before he comes back. It's still a little ways away. They're saying it could be as early as late June.
Yeah, I predicted June was when he was going to come back. That was my prediction in the offseason. And I said May would not surprise me, which it wouldn't, because I still think that like this kid, he's ridiculous in everything he does. So, and I think rehab, why wouldn't Didi overachieve in rehabbing his own body? Of course he's going to overachieve.
All right, let's make a little bet. What date do you think he's coming back?
I mean, I think it's going to be June. I think it will be in June. I think he's going to come back.
Well, that's not a date. June is not a date.
Okay, fine. June, let me look at the schedule so I can give you a game.
Yeah,
okay?
That's what I'm doing.
Let's put some Mike Francesa airtime out right now.
So I think this is what's going to happen. He is going to come back July 2nd at the New York Mets. That is after the Yankees come back from London.
Oh, see. Okay. He's going to be there for London. He's going to play in the London games.
I don't think he's going to play in the London games. I think he's going to play right after they come back.
Sir Didi is definitely playing in the London games.
The Yankees have... It's a good point. The Yankees have a weird schedule in that time because they have two off days before the London games and they have an off day after the London games. So the first game back after London is July 2nd at the Mets. So that's what I'm predicting.
Okay. I got you right here. Old Timers Day is Sunday the 23rd. That's Houston. Then they have a set against Toronto. Then they have a set against Toronto. I think Didi will be up in the stadium for Old Timers Day so that he can go and schmooze with all the boys and that he will play in the Toronto series. And we're going to make sure that Didi's okay because he's going to play in the Toronto series. Maybe he won't play the whole series, but he'll play a game or two because then he's got 2 days off to see how his body feels to go into the games in London because he's definitely going to play in those games in London if he's physically able because he's Sir Didi and it just makes too much sense. That's why.
So you're predicting
and he's going to draw Big Ben. He's going to be on the road with the boys. You're telling me he doesn't want to go to that? He's going
to
go to
that. I'm sure he wants to go. He could go to that. He just might not play. So you're saying
he's not going
to
go. He's not going to go if he's not with the team.
Why?
And he's not going to be with the team because he's going to be rehabbing.
You're right.
I'm looking at him in the building for the Houston series, probably coming up that with the end of that so we can play on Monday. And he'll play against Toronto. And then he'll be ready for Boston in London.
You're predicting 3 days before me.
I'm predicting a month before you. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, June.
June to July. Okay. That's some. All right. Chad Green was called up and looked like Chad Green in his mop-up duty on Sunday. Struck out the side. He said he fixed his mechanical issues in the minors. Gave up 2 runs and 5 hits over 7 2/3 in the minors. If we can get Chad Green back, the bullpen starts to look a little different if you can add Chad Green back to the mix.
Interesting to hear about the mechanical issues too. Breaking the hands early is what they came to. He was breaking his hands too early, and that was throwing other things off. So I when they fixed the mechanical issue of bringing his hands together and when they were coming apart, then other things fell back into flow, and apparently he had to make a couple little small tweaks after that, but felt good. So interesting to see how something like that, so like breaking the hands, because nobody to the naked eye that's a fan of the game would probably think of breaking the hands and how that would make you out of sync with the rest of your body and the rest of your, you know, your wind up and the delivery of your pitches. But that was him. And he was able to fix that. He had some good numbers in Scranton, a lot of strikeouts, which you'd expect. Obviously, that's the thing. When we're looking at a major league guy going into Scranton, what we want to see is high strikeout numbers. We want to see the ball around the plate, them working on their command. And that was one of the flags that I saw with Elias again. You know, he's going down there and still struggling in Scranton. Like, he's not getting the production level against inferior opponents. That's a red flag. That's a guy that's not producing on that level. And you'd expect him to produce on that level at this point, because you're not just working out things. You're trying to, you know, you're working out the things that you would do on the major league level. So you should be taking care of inferior opponents at that point. That's what we saw with Chad Green. Came up and then struck out the side in a 7-1 game. But again, he was major league, ninth inning against major league guys.
That was a confidence booster too.
Absolutely.
Because the guy looked like he was afraid to pitch in the majors the last time we saw him. That's how bad he was.
He looked like he was just, he had
defeated,
no idea why.
He looked
why.
Like a defeated man walking off the mound. He was just giving up home runs, was walking guys. He was giving up home runs. He was just getting crushed.
And you're talking about like arm slot. You're looking at what's happening. You're like, maybe, you know.
And that's all fun. That's all great to say until you actually prove it at the majors again.
Yes. And you have to have the confidence also that like the adjustment that you made was the right adjustment, that now you feel back and in sync and right. And, you know, from all the things that he's been saying, like, that's what he felt. He felt the adjustment that he made in the minor leagues, and credit to the Yankee staff. You know, I'm sure this was like a team effort, everybody looking at film, and then them, you know, maybe they identified what it was at that point when he was struggling in the majors and he just needed time to fix it. And that's why he was in Scranton, so that he could get those reps to fix what they initially saw. But, It's good. And he needs the confidence and he's got it. So that's good.
Before we do mailbags, the Yankees, like you said, are going to play 3 against Baltimore this week. It was a weird road trip, just 3 games. Baltimore's coming in. They have the worst pitching staff in the majors, maybe in major league history. 5.59 team ERA. They've allowed 81 home runs, 2.2 per 9 innings. They're just so damn bad. Lasagna's going to get another start in place of Paxton.
Yes.
Which I think was maybe a little minor question mark, because he didn't look great, but he's going to
get a start. We said possibly Sessa, but again, this is what it's going to be.
Loaiza to
Sessa. Yes. It's going to be him. I mean, they're going to be – Sessa's not – he's essentially opening the game.
Loaiza is. 3 innings.
Yeah.
3 or 4 innings.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll ride him, though. They're playing against Baltimore, so he might be able to find some –
what I think is you're playing against Baltimore, so you're looking to score 7-8 runs.
Look to score 7-8 runs, but also you might be able to build up some confidence against this team as well. But again, like we saw, he wasn't able to produce at the AAA level, so we'll see what happens against the Baltimore lineup.
Mailbags. First one up is from Joe at Joseph_P7 on Twitter. Is Boone the AL manager of the year to this point?
I'm interested to see what you're going to say, because you're going to go up against your boy. But, I mean, he's got to be there with the amount of injuries that the Yankees have sustained this season and the cast of characters that have come up and you know, produced at a high level has been phenomenal. And yes, a lot of that goes to Cashman. You know, I gave you a cop-out answer a week and a half ago when you asked me where the credit goes to. Is it Cashman? Is it Boone? And I said 50-50. Someone's got to get the players there, but the players got to play, and someone's got to put them in the position. I'm sticking to that. I think it's close. It's around that. But he's gotten the most out of what he's had on the field, and they're playing at a high level. So a lot of credit needs to go to Boone.
a Yankees manager will never win the manager of the year. I don't think they will ever vote for a Yankees manager because
Yankee bias, because the writers hate the Yankees.
It's not that. I think part of winning manager of the year is odds need to be stacked against you, and your team doesn't have to have resources. It's like you do more with less. And I know the Yankees have. And that's the thing. That's why it's kind of hypocritical.
This would be the year. This would be the year.
If there's any year, this would be the year. But I still don't think it's going to happen because on the face of it, whoever's voting for this looks $200 million payroll, all these resources. It's the New York Yankees. They're just not going to vote for Aaron Boone.
$200 million payroll is just not a big deal anymore, though. That's the thing. Like, that's becoming more of not a knock against the New York Yankees because they're not the only team doing it. They're not the highest payroll anymore. I feel like that narrative has slowed down a bit. And when writers are looking at, and you're getting a lot more of these writers who, you know, are interested in sabermetrics as well, and there's an appreciation for that, I think. But you're seeing that they've done it with the guys like Voit, the guys that Cashman has gone out and found off the scrap heap.
But again, you're talking about Cashman.
No, I know that, but also now they're producing on the major league level. This is where Boone has put them into positions where they can compete. I think that the Yankee bias and the whole, you know, big bad New York Yankees thing is potentially going away. So I do think this would be a year where he will get a lot of consideration.
Yeah, other candidates might be Kevin Cash for the Rays, Rocco Baldelli for the Twins. They're both leading their division right now. And it's you don't vote until the end of the season, but we're just talking about on May 13th. That's the situation we're in.
Rocco Baldelli, man, I tell you what, he's really gotten the most out of Michael Pineda. He's done wonders with Michael Pineda, man.
Yeah.
That guy.
Shannon, when do we see Chance Adams come up? With all the injuries, especially the Paxton one, I can't help but wonder if he will be another Justice Sheffield trade bait piece, as the Yankees have yet to bring him up and give him an opportunity to truly shine. Do they still believe in him, or has he become an old thought?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Quick couple stats. We saw him last year, 3 games, 1 start, 7 2/3 innings. He gave up 8 hits and 6 earned runs, 4 walks. It's always the walks with him. 4 walks and 7 2/3 innings, not good. And if you look at his minors this year, in 30 innings, he's walked 15 guys.
We've seen Chance Adams rise up as a guy that was potentially a possibility as a starter for the New York Yankees. He came up and had that, you know, that good run where he went from single A to triple A. In a season he went to double A. I think he pitched to triple A for a couple starts. If he got there, maybe been double A. But either way, he had a pretty fast rise through the system, and he was drafted and came out as a reliever. Then he was switched to starter, and now we're seeing him as a full-blown starter. I think his opportunity is gone. I think Chance Adams really is not in the cards any longer for what the Yankees are looking at. They have a ton of arms that are coming up fast through the organization at lower levels that I think they like a hell of a lot more.
So is he, though? Because he's number 20 on their top 30 major league.
He's just a guy, man, who's stumbling
down. That's number 20 in their system. That doesn't even register in overall major league baseball.
The walks are a significant problem.
37 strikeouts, though, in the minors in 30 innings so far.
It doesn't matter. He's still gotten 15 walks. He's not showing command. If he's not showing the command in the minor leagues, he's coming up to the majors also having command issues. I mean, I know it's one start.
Here's what I'm talking about, though. 37 strikeouts in 30 innings. Does that maybe extrapolate to a bullpen arm?
If you're not walking guys, you're still walking guys as a bullpen arm. That's a problem.
But you can deal with, if you walk one guy but strike out two guys or two or three guys as a bullpen guy, if that's your walk ratio.
You're striking these guys out in triple A. You're not striking these guys out at the major league level. You're striking them out in triple A. You're still walking guys.
If you're saying his chance with the Yankees is done, then that really only leaves trade. And I don't think no one's looking to trade. I mean, he's a throw-in, right?
He's a throw-in. He's a player to be named later. He's a cash guy. I think that's what he's playing himself into, honestly. I don't think that they'll probably hold on to him as a depth piece as long as they can, because you never know. And he does have some experience. So I could see them, you know, giving him an opportunity if there was a last resort.
Why did he, I forget. So last year, I know he started a game in Boston.
It was right before the All-Star break, if I remember correctly.
No, it was the weekend they got swept.
I'm still thinking of Refslander right before the All-Star break.
Why did he get the start? He's not on the 40-man roster.
That's why.
Why isn't he on the? Oh wait, sorry, I'm not looking at the right thing. Why did he get that start though? What happened?
I mean, they were down. they needed an arm, and he
Chance
came
Adams
up.
Is on the 40-man roster.
He's on the 40-man roster.
But like, why would? I'm trying to remember. Was he gets the start? It was a spot start in Boston. I just don't remember the scenario. Like
he was thrown into the fire for a series, and he actually pitched. We saw him go in there and
decent.
I thought pitched pretty well in a really tough situation.
Oh, J-Hab had coccyx. Remember? Yes. What's that disease called?
Oh, hand, mouth, and foot.
Yeah, but what's it actually called? Coccyx?
I don't know what it's called.
Coccyx?
Coccyx?
Yeah.
Kikuchi?
J-Hab had hand, foot, and mouth disease. That's why he got the spot start for him, right? That's what happened.
Your memory is better than mine with the hand, mouth, and foot disease. But the thing is that I you know, when he came up and pitched relatively well, unless he cleans up the walks, we're not going to see this guy be actually considered anything on the major league level unless the Yankees are completely decimated. He's just I just don't think he's in their cards. I think he's completely fallen off of their radar as a guy that they would expect to be a contributor.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't improved.
People listening to the podcast probably don't realize we had him on the show 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Go back and listen to that episode if you want to.
Yeah. Do it right before you go to sleep.
Jason Alexander says, a pleasant surprise so far has been Tario Estrada, but what is his long-term role on this team? If it's a starter, if so, where? Trade bait? Or is he going to overtake Wade as a potential primary bench guy? I don't think Wade is a primary bench guy at this point, but...
No, but that's who he could be. So that's, I think everybody looks at him as that potential. I think Estrada is a guy that they're definitely high on, that he's come back. I think, you know, he's number 19. He's just ahead of Chance Adams, but I think that 19 is actually low for what they think his ceiling is. He was
part of the reason is because he
got
playing
shot
with a bullet in his hip.
He got shot last year, literally, and he's coming back from a bullet wound. So, that's going to knock you down a little bit on the depth chart of your prospect rankings. This is a guy, though, that has a lot of ability and can play multiple positions. We even saw him go into left field after he hadn't played left field since, you know, I think high school or wherever, like lower in his playing career, but came up and played and played admirably. So they have confidence that he can go around the diamond and play different areas. So, yeah, I think long term we see him as a potential guy that could fill in as a utility guy, or they could trade him. You know, they build up value as they play in the major leagues, and guys are getting opportunities to play right now. So he's going to slot in as a utility guy and a depth piece right now.
If he does stay on the roster, I think Sterling's going to have to come up with a better home run call than Tyro hits one to Cairo.
I think that Sterling forgot again.
He copied the Luke Voit one, which is Voit hits one to Detroit.
Well, I mean, he rhymes. He's a rhymer. He's got rhythm.
But
like,
usually
this is what
his rhymes are... Not, I mean, this is just plug and play. Hit,
Cairo
player
is a city
hits one
in freaking
to
Egypt,
city.
And the home run was a wall scraper. Cairo is
matter.
A city.
That
Cairo
doesn't
is
matter.
A city in Egypt.
Uh huh. Detroit right? is a city in the Midwest. What happens
yes.
if what happens?
Luke Voit could actually
Luke
hit a
Voit,
ball to the Midwest.
But what happens when Luke
He's from
Voit,
the Midwest?
What happens when the Yankees are playing in Detroit and Luke Voit hits a home run?
He hits it out of Detroit.
That's probably what he will say.
There you go. But no, Tyro Estrada, the Tyro to Cairo, I think
F minus.
I think Sterling forgot again, and it's the first thing he could. He's like, I can't come up with nothing. First thing he thought of, A, B, C, Cairo.
Do you think he consults,
went through the alphabet quickly with rhymes and Cairo got hit?
Does he consult Susan?
Or he
at
thought
all?
Of Miguel Cairo. I thought maybe he thought of Miguel Cairo.
Okay.
Boom. Cairo.
I like Miguel Cairo.
He thought of they were probably talking about Miguel Cairo. Oh, what a great player Miguel Cairo was. You know, and they're just went
As
through
Susan,
at
Susan
some point.
Susan was not happy about the lights going off yesterday.
I could see her being very very miserable with the light.
They don't like delays. So Susan and John don't like delays. They hate rain delays. Susan's always consulting
they
the
hate
weather
app. Slow play, period.
So when they're in a dome in a controlled environment and they think they're going to just get... Because that game was moving along quite quickly yesterday.
Ninth inning.
And then boom, all of a sudden, half hour delay to the friggin' garbage can lights turn off. They were not
it's
happy.
It's a kick in the nuts. It's not good. It's almost like you're thinking like the Rays are doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Didn't work. Greg from Canada, the Yanks are going to make a big trade at some point over the next few months. Who do you think the Yankees' best trade chip is at this point? Esteban Florial, Albert Abreu, Mike King, maybe someone that's been up and filling in admirably like Urshela and or Estrada. Who you got? And I think that...
So Greg's going all in that they are making a trade.
I don't know why. See, if you're going to make a trade, it's going to be for pitching, right? I don't see them making a trade for a position player.
Right.
So
that would make no sense to me.
If you're going to trade for a pitcher, why would you do that when you could just go out and spend money on Keuchel?
There's no reason you would do that.
Right, because you're going to sign Keuchel after
unless you have an opportunity at somebody who's a much better, longer-term piece, younger guy that
right,
you
but
think
we
will
don't
help
know who
you.
That is at this point.
Right.
If you're just looking for a one-year option, Keuchel's your guy. You'd sign in, and I think we have a next question about what we would actually sign Keuchel to, so I'll read that in a second. But I just want to say, you're not going to trade up, let's just use Madison Bumgarner, because I know that was rumored. His no-trade targets came up this weekend, and the Yankees are on his no-trade list. But if he were to waive it, maybe he'd come to the Yankees. Why would you trade for someone like Madison Bumgarner, who you'd have to give up assets for, significant assets, and might not give you a better half season than Dallas Keuchel?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. When Dallas Keuchel is sitting out there and in your face as a guy that's available for money and probably a lot of money, he's probably going to ask for a King's ransom to come back and help a contender.
Let's read this. Ryan Huckabee. At Ryan Huckabee on Twitter. Some indicators are that Keuchel will be a Yankee. By indicators, I mean social media gossip. If Keuchel is to be a Yankee, what is the maximum amount of money and length of contract you would be okay with?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some articles put out there as well from I think the Times or the Daily News talking
Heyman
about.
Talked about he was like the Yankees.
Yeah. Heyman talks about everything. Every single possible rumor you could think of that's floated on Yankees Twitter. Heyman writes it in his little book. And mm-hmm. talks about it, and then it becomes
his news and notes
a thing. So yeah, I mean, they're saying that the Yankees have one of the better opportunities, and if you're looking at possible suitors, that they make a lot of sense, and they do. But so does Houston. I mean, like Houston makes a lot of sense too, unless there's bad blood, which
so
I don't
Red
think.
Sox.
I don't think that makes any. I don't think bad blood's a thing really in professional sports as much anymore. But the Red Sox also make a lot of sense. So yeah.
So he turned down Houston's qualifying offer of $17.9 million. I don't think he will take a penny under that.
Oh, really? So you think that he's going to ask for that for the second half of the year?
No, it would be a prorated $17.9 million.
Okay.
I think that's what you're looking at. About prorated $20 million.
Yeah,
so you're looking at like $12 million.
You have to put a premium on it.
You're looking at like $12 million for the second half of the season.
It's $24 million then. So you're looking at a premium. I think it's going to be a premium on top of that because you're going to get a guy in the second half that's you know theoretically going to be ready to go right as you and plug and play. And you're getting you know a number two guy right. Like what are we expecting? We're not expecting a number one guy from Dallas Keuchel, especially he's been off this time. Ceiling is a number two, you know, probably more of a number three, right? I mean, like that's what you're hoping for. Number one Keuchel, but you're not going to get that.
A lot of this also depends on Severino and what they expect Severino to do. If they don't expect Severino to really come back this year, then they might have to sign Keuchel.
And that's when we're talking about when the draft is, when the All-Star break is, when Severino is potentially going to start ramping up again. Like all of these are pretty close in timing. So the Yankees should have at least a relatively, and I'm sure they already have an idea of what's realistic for Severino. And it could be, you know, we're going to let him start ramping up and see how he does on that point. And if there's anything at all that we see that's a discomfort or a flag, we're going to shut him down because I do think that the leash for him physically is going to be very, very short. And at that point, then they go and they look at, Keuchel or making a move. But if Keuchel's still there, why would you not pay money?
I also don't see the Yankees or Houston or the Red Sox signing Keuchel for more than just the rest of the year. If there's a team, a wild card team that comes in, maybe a little bit smaller of a market team, they might offer him two like a year plus next year or something like that, or maybe like a year and an option.
Yeah, but I don't think he wants that. I think.
So you think he just wants to come in and just get paid? Couple million, 10 million, 12 million for the rest of the year,
yeah.
And then go to free agency again.
Yeah.
But what if a team offers him a player option where he can sort of assess the situation next year, but know he has a backup plan? You know, you offer him $12 million for the rest of the year, and then he can opt in at $18 million next year, or he can go to free agency.
I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, maybe something like that. But I do think that he's trying to increase his leverage at this point, and if he can come in and pitch at a high level for the second half of the year.
If he comes in and dominates, then he opts out. If he comes in and he's mediocre, then he picks up his option.
That's why I think a player option would make sense. But I don't think, you know, like any other, unless he were to get a long-term deal, which is not going to happen. If he were to get a long-term deal, then that's something. But if not, like, I don't know why he would do that. A player option I could see, because then the leverage is, and he's in a position of control at that point. But I do think he's going to show up, try to pitch his ass off, build his value up to a point where he could go out and make himself a, you know, a significant long-term deal and try to get a better deal for next year. But again, you know, there's so many things that are coming up in the near future with the collective bargaining agreement and all these things in play that I just think he's going to get paid as much as he possibly can right now and then play his cards again in the offseason.
I agree. And I wouldn't be opposed to the 1 year prorated qualifying offer-ish deal for the Yankees.
It's just going to be very interesting because you're looking at the Yankees and the Red Sox and they're up against that second threshold with the luxury tax.
I think at this point, I don't think they care.
If you're doing it for just half of a year, so you're paying him whatever it is, and then you're going over and you're paying that penalty as well. So that $10 to $12 million contract or whatever it may be turns into a significantly higher dollar amount on the bottom line to what you're paying.
But
this year.
Yankees are already pretty much going to go over that. Their asses are against that threshold right now. They're right there.
Look, there's another argument when you say, I mean, we're going all in on this trade. Greg from Canada is going all in on this trade, that there's going to be a trade. You could look at this Yankees roster and say what's happened right now actually goes totally against that and says, why would they make a trade at this point? Because the depth is better than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a very deep team that's playing at a high level. Why would we make a trade? What are we going to get that's better than what we have currently, plus all the guys that come back?
In theory, the Yankees are acquiring at some point midseason Dellin Betances, Luis Severino, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, and Andujar.
And Andujar at full strength offensively. Right.
So like I don't see, unless there's a major setback, unless Severino gets shut down for the entire year, unless
Paxton's still out there too with an injury that we don't know what's going to come back.
Unless Judge's oblique injury is so bad he's got to miss the entire season. Unless something like that happens, I don't see them making a major acquisition on the trade front. I do see a possible signing. I can see that.
Yeah, it's just the money's going to play into it, I think. I think that luxury tax, depending on where they are, whether we want to admit it or not, is going to play into it. And the Red Sox did not make a move this offseason and strategically because they know that they have to re-sign guys. They know that they have
started re-signing guys. They gave Chris Sale a huge contract.
I know that, but that's why they didn't sign him. So that Mookie Betts is still, you know, going to be a guy that they are going to have to pay
a $200 million guy.
Yes. So they're going to have, they know that they have guys that they have to sign.
Maybe $300 million.
That's going to play into the fact that they haven't done anything either, and if they're going to go out and sign Keuchel for just money, because now just money is putting you over that threshold. Mm.
All right, guys, thank you for all the mailbag questions. Every Monday episode, we do mailbags. You can go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast to submit them. Final topic. These were much talked about cleats, Clint Frazier's cat cleats for Mother's Day. What'd you think of these things? I agree.
We all know my thoughts on cats. All right, look, he's paying a tribute to his mother. It's his mother's cats. He's putting his cats on the shoes for his mom. We know that Clint Frazier likes cats. He's got a couple of them. You know, I think the whole cat, the reason I got down on the cats in the first place, one, I'm not a cat guy. That's number one. Definitely not a cat guy. Certainly not a cat guy. If you didn't know, I'm not a cat guy. But the hairless cat, man, the hairless cat really, like, there's voodoo in that cat. Like, I think that cat is evil. I think there's something wrong with that cat. I think it put a hex on this team. I don't like it. I don't like that Bird puts it in his coat. I think it's disgusting. I think that it's ended his career, and probably this cat has been gnawing at his legs.
Yeah, so that's asleep, what I was going to say. So you
and has put a hex on his brittle bones.
You know how people say that if you own a dog and you die in the middle of the night, the dog will bark for help and will sleep by your side because they're loyal to the owner. Right. If you die and you're a cat owner in the middle of the night, the cat will eventually eat you because it's going to get hungry.
Yeah.
What if we have a scenario where Greg Bird's hairless cat is not physically eating him, but he's eating his soul?
I mean, I think that's happening.
He's eating him from the inside out, and it's starting with the ankle and the foot. All the cartilage is gone. All the bones are now brittle.
Yeah.
I think that's what's happened to Greg Bird.
Look, man, I mean, you know, he has spent a lot of time with this cat. He was on, you know, in remote areas with this cat, fishing by himself. I don't know what this cat's doing. The cat is evil. It's put a hex on him, and he's allowed that to happen.
There's now no the cat else, might be putting no hexes on the rest of the players with all these injuries.
I fully believe that. I believe that because they were in Florida for a long time, they were in Tampa, the cat was probably in Tampa. They came out of spring training, and all of a sudden, bad things started happening.
Do we still sell the hairless cat shirt on the website?
I think I took it down. Actually,
you got to take that thing down.
I do.
Maybe do a final sale on it, like $1.
No. I'm not going to. No. No, I need to get rid of it. I need to burn it.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode. Any final words, Scott? Good weekend. I'm feeling good about this weekend. I think what happened is pretty much as best as it could have gone.
It was a good scenario. I think they played. Obviously, they you know, got rid of the problems that they had at the Trop.
Yeah.
The Trop showed its ugly head. I'm glad that happened at the
but they, you know, prevailed.
The final hour.
It didn't negatively affect them.
No, they came right back out, and there was a ball hit to Cairo.
Last year, the power goes out, then the Yankees blow that game in the ninth inning.
Yeah. The power was blown, and it went to Cairo, and we're all good. All right? And now we come and we beat the living shit out of the Baltimore Orioles because we cannot lose another game to them. And that's it. You know, they just keep this thing rolling on. And my prediction is that Miguel Andujar will go on a rampage. Hopefully it's not in Scranton and it's up here in the Bronx against the Baltimore Orioles.
All right. I'm looking forward to seeing how Hicks does in back in Major League action. And we will talk to you Thursday.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.